Hey guys, welcome to a special edition of Authors Are Rockstars. I'm Michelle.
And I'm Allison, and we have got a really fun show for
you. Today we got to go out in the field and attend the launch party of Wolfsbane by Andrea Kramer and Supernaturally by Kirsten White, who we're also with Stephanie Perkins, author of the amazing Anna and the French Kiss.
Yay!
Barnes & Noble in Oceanside was so nice, and they let us use their back room so that we could do the podcast right before the ladies went out on stage.
Listeners, if you're ever in Oceanside, California, definitely visit this Barnes & Noble. They rule. They did such a great job with the event, and it had a fantastic turnout. It was so much fun. And we felt really lucky to be able to interview these three incredible authors. Neither of us can get enough of their books.
Yeah, their books are amazing. I completely agree with you, Allison. If I had rereading time, these would all be on my reread list.
Oh, me too.
Well, okay, I have to be honest, Andrea, that I'll probably wait to reread until Blood Rose is out because those cliffhangers are killers.
Totally. Those are going to be so much fun to read all together.
All right, well, let's get to the interview. And remember, we're out in the field and it's a big group of us. So volumes are going to go up and down. So beware of that if you're wearing headphones.
Welcome to a special edition of Authors Are Rockstars. We're at the launch party for Kirsten White's Supernaturally and Andrea Kramer's Wolfsbane. These talented ladies are also joined by the awesome Stephanie Perkins, author of Anna and the French Kiss. Thank you so much for joining us, ladies.
Thank you, ladies.
We're so excited to have you.
Yay! We're so excited. So we'd like to start off the show by asking you each a couple of questions individually about your books, and then we have some questions that are for you as a group, including some submitted by our listeners. So are you ready?
Yes!
Yeah! Woo! Okay, good. Great. Okay, so let's start with you, Andrea. Your take on werewolves is really unique. Did you change up werewolves because you wanted something different, or did it just evolve from the magical world you created?
That's a great question, and actually it's a very personal decision that I made. Calla was the inspiration for the Nightshade series, and I knew right away when she came into my mind that she was a girl who was 17, but that she was also a wolf. But that was a huge problem for me because I grew up in the middle of the woods in northern Wisconsin, and to me, wolves were beautiful, amazing creatures, and when I thought, if I could become a wolf, I would say, yes, please, that sounds amazing, whereas werewolves in most mythology are either diseased or cursed, and they end up being this slovenly, horrible, half-man, half-creature, not pretty to look at in the mirror at all, and that wasn't what I wanted, so I really wanted to create a new wolf mythology that reflected how pack mentality worked, how strong those bonds were, and the relationships between them, and to really create a spin on wolves that was more positive than what I've seen.
Oh, that's really, really interesting.
So cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. I love it.
Is it crazy to see readers having crushes on your characters? I mean, I know I might get some flack right now from Team Ren people, but I'm totally Team Shay.
Well, you know what I do, one of my favorite things, and I love this, is that, and I'm not saying this in any dishonesty whatsoever, it still makes me so happy. I'm so proud of that. The Team Ren, Team Shay divide is really 50-50. And I really wanted that. And honestly, people ask me all the time if I'm Team Ren or Team Shay, and my answer is and always will be, I'm Team Calla, because it's her choice, not mine. But that doesn't mean I don't totally have crushes of my own on both of them, because I wrote them that way.
Right. Well, and you can do that. You're the author.
I can do that. I love my boys very much. And I have to say, I actually maybe even have bigger crushes on Ethan and Connor, who appear in Wolfsbane for the first time. Some new, very, very lovely young men.
We do. The readers like that, that's for sure. Well, your books had so much going on and some killer cliffhangers. I read online that you don't write your scenes in chronological order. So can you talk to us a little bit about your writing process?
Yeah, I call myself a jigsaw puzzle writer because I don't write in order at all. When I'm forced to outline, it's like pulling teeth. I absolutely hate it. I have to write scenes as they inspire me. I see them very visually in my mind. And so I have to jump around as I'm writing. I keep it all just in one Word document, and then I figure out how to fit the pieces together. Because I go in knowing what the very big picture is, kind of the frame, and then fill in the pieces along the way. So that's how I write.
Oh, very cool. It all fits together, obviously, in a beautiful package in the end.
Oh, thank
you. That's so cool.
We're going to move on to Kirsten. And actually, Allison has the first question for you here.
I do. So, Kirsten, you took on a lot of different mythological creatures when writing Paranormalcy and Supernaturally. That was quite the undertaking because you had just about everything in there. It was awesome. I love how how you included, like, the traditional characteristics of each creature, but also turned, like, the stereotypes of them kind of on their head. So did you do a lot of research about each creature and their legends, or have you always been into the paranormal, or how'd that come about?
I really have, and not so much paranormal as in, like, I, like, think that things are real, but I love mythology, and I love regional mythology and regional myths and legends, and I love looking at them as a reflection of the culture and of ways that the culture interacted with and interpreted the world around them. And so I did read a lot of traditional mythology, traditional fae mythology from the British Isles, traditional vampire mythology. I actually have been to Romania. They hate the Western concept of vampires. it's almost offensive to them because of Vlad Tepes, who is the historical Dracula, is a national hero to them.
Oh.
It would be like if somebody turned George Washington into a swamp monster. Except I actually think that would be awesome.
Right. That's my next book.
Yeah. Right.
George Washington, swamp monster.
Bestseller for sure.
Yes, absolutely. But I really enjoyed going back to the very traditional roots of these creatures and kind of turning sort of the pop culture stereotypes on their head. And I also really had fun, and I did this more so in Supernaturally, bringing in some lesser known mythological creatures from, I did some Scandinavian ones, I did some, and now I can't think of any of them.
There was a lot.
There were a lot. And it was really fun bringing in some lesser known ones, because once you turn the popular ones on their heads, then you can bring in the lesser known ones and introduce people to those as well. And I really had a lot of fun doing that research and finding those.
So fun. Well, it was so fun to read. That's for sure. Yes.
Okay, I think all of our listeners are dying to know, are you as sassy in real life as your lead? Because seriously, she's one sassy character.
Love her.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, maybe we should ask the other two authors.
Steph has been living with me for a week.
So, you know, I always say the one characteristic of mine that I gave to Evie was my sense of humor. And the only reason I did that is because I don't know any other way to be funny. I wish I did. I think humor is the hardest language to learn, and it's the hardest to imitate if it doesn't come to you naturally. Mm-hmm. So Evie definitely has my sense of humor. I definitely was not as brave as she is when I was a teenager, and I used a lot of that sarcasm and humor to kind of mask my own raging insecurity, which is not as raging these days, thankfully. So yeah, she definitely has my sense of humor, but I think as a character, she's much braver and is much more willing to speak up about what she wants.
That's definitely something that we can all strive for, especially teen readers, because it's hard to be a teen, guys.
Sure.
So I read on your website with much amazement that you started writing shortly after having your first baby. How did you do that? Most new moms are trying to get some sleep.
Yeah, I was just really an overachiever. I actually joke I had a husband, a degree, and a baby all before I turned 21. So I had actually I had her 2 weeks after my last final in college. And then my husband started law school. And I was at home with this very beautiful, incredibly colicky baby.
Oh, no.
And I had to do something to stay sane. And so I started writing. But, you know, granted, that first book took me 2 years. It was only 40,000 words. And it was really bad. So don't be too impressed here. But writing has always been kind of my sanctuary, especially where I am a stay-at-home mom. My kids don't think I'm funny.
Oh.
Unless I'm like, you know, throwing them across the couch or something, you know, like they don't really get my sense of humor. And so I turned to blogging and to writing to really kind of indulge in these more adult aspects of my life that I was not getting to engage in every day of my life. Very rarely, in fact. And so writing for me was very much an escape from the very joyful monotonies of motherhood. And so I would say having kids is what made me write. I don't know if I would have ever started writing if I didn't have kids.
That's really amazing. We have toddlers at home. So it's very inspirational.
There are novels, Michelle.
Yes, seriously.
Get on that, girls.
Well, we'll just have to work on that. Or I might just want to get some sleep. So let's go ahead and talk to Stephanie now.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, Stephanie. So your book I was reading, it started out as a project for National Novel Writing Month.
Yes.
So was that your first time participating, and had you written novels before that?
Yeah, actually, it was my first year participating, and it wasn't my first novel, though. My first novel is actually going to be my second novel. I worked on Lola and the Boy Next Door. I've worked on it for about 10 years now. Wow. It's been a very, very long and heartbreaking project, and I'm really glad that, the release date is soon, and I can end that chapter of my life. But I struggled with Lola for a very long time as an adult novel. And then I realized I was writing for the wrong audience, and I switched to young adult, and I'd been poo-pooing NaNoWriMo for years, like, oh, who can write a novel in a month? That's really silly. And I was missing the point that it's not about writing a good novel in a month. It's about just writing and getting a draft out there. And I'd certainly never reached the end of Lola before. So I started with a new project, and about a week before NaNoWriMo started, I had a dream and I saw my characters, and it all came from there. But my original NaNoWriMo book isn't anything like the final one. It's actually a mystery.
Oh, wow.
They're solving an art history mystery. So, like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yes, it was NaNoWriMo, but it was exploratory rather than, you know, something legitimate you could publish.
Right, but like you said, that was the point of that.
Yeah, so I learned really who the characters cool. were, and how I was fun. Able to develop the real story off of what I learned during that experience.
That's amazing. Cool.
Well, you really brought the city of Paris to life.
Thank
and the French Kiss. I understand you spent a month there. Was it before or after you wrote
it? It was after, actually. Wow. When I wrote it, I did not have the finances to spend time there, so I was working as a librarian at the time, and all librarians know about the power of research.
Yes!
And I had really taken heart in the fact that Diana Gabaldon, an adult author, she wrote the Outlander series before she had ever been to Scotland, and they're so historically accurate that in Scotland they're kept in the Scottish history section, and I knew that if she could do that, I could do that too. And so, you know, I just read across all the boards about, you know, pretty much every section of the Dewey Decimal System. I read anything related to France or French, the French language, or Paris that I could get my hands on. And I watched a lot of films, French films, and I would watch the background of the films to see what was, like, how... I really wasn't watching for plot so much as what buildings looked like, what doors looked like, how people moved in France, the different mannerisms. And I listened to a lot of French music and ate a lot of French food. I just did everything but visit France.
That's awesome. Well, it really worked.
Thank you.
I studied a lot in Paris, and, like, your book just made me want to turn around and go back there.
Thank you.
So, actually, I was going to ask, how much French food did you eat while writing this? Because I wanted, like, a crepe the whole time I was reading.
I ate a lot. And then pretty much the month that I spent there, it was just, it was a month of eating. People asked me, like, oh, what's your favorite thing in Paris? And I think they're expecting me to say, like, Notre Dame or the Eiffel Tower or the Louvre or whatever. And I'm like, the food.
Yes. What was your favorite kind of food there?
I gave it to Anna. Banana Nutella crepes are just the best.
So good.
Yeah. Creme brulee is probably my second favorite. Mm-hmm. And I've a character in my third book, Isla and the Happily Ever After, which is being released next year. It's also set in Paris. She likes creme brulee, so I was able to slip that one back in.
Nice, nice.
Very nice. Well, we also have one question from our listeners just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Beth S. said, Stephanie looks awesome with those blue streaks in her hair.
Yes, she does.
What made her decide to get them? If I weren't a teacher at a conservative Catholic school, I'd want to get some in my own hair.
That's a great question.
Thank you. It was Beth, is that?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks, Beth. Yeah, this is actually my most commonly asked question, is about my hair. Yeah, there was no real reason for having it. I just always wanted blue streaks. And, you know, it happened during a time in my life when I was, a lot of things were out of my control, and I thought, you know, well, my hair is one thing I can control, and I did it and loved it, and then shortly after that, I got seriously involved in publishing. You know, I got an agent and editor, and they were very excited that kind of I had this trademark, so it's a good thing I like it, because I'm stuck with it for a few years.
That's so funny. It's, yeah. It's your thing now.
It is.
Well, it looks fabulous.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, let's go ahead and do group questions.
Yay!
So let's kick it off with our traditional Authors Are Rock Stars question, which is, if your main character, all of you, were going out to karaoke, what would she sing? Or feel free to bring in your guy characters too. Like, would they have a karaoke party? Who would be, you know,
are they playing rock
refusing
band?
Refusing to sing.
But we're a little bit about music here too. We support indie artists as well as, you know, the publishing industry. So
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's no way that Anna would ever get on a stage and sing. No way in a million years.
Yeah.
Etienne could make her.
No.
No?
No.
You don't think she'd do it for
no,
him?
No, she'll push against him. She won't push against him, but she'll kind of butt heads with him. Other girls, if he asked any other girl, I think they would say yes and
if
go sing.
If he asked me, I would say yes.
Right. No, but Anna wouldn't. And I, you know, honestly, I don't think he would either. I think that's kind of beneath him, sadly.
Oh.
Yeah, I would definitely say Lend would not do it.
No.
He likes to fly under the radar just because he is so... He doesn't want to get noticed. Evie, and I'm sorry to all the indie artists out there, she would sing whatever song was number one. Like, songs come to mind right now are like, So What, I'm Still a Rock Star. And
right. But I don't like her. But episode of Easton Heights.
Yes, exactly. Whatever song was featured on that week's episode of Easton Heights, that's what she would be singing.
I want to hang out with her.
I know, right? She's fun. She's more fun than I am.
I think that, see, Calla would definitely do it under the right circumstances, and both Ren and Jay would totally do it as well.
Awesome.
But Calla would send... She would sing something more classic. Like, I could totally see her singing Joan Jett.
Yeah, definitely.
She'd rock that.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, well, another fun question for you guys, and this is definitely a group activity here. How would your characters react to each other if they meet? This is quite the mesh of worlds.
Right? Mine would be pretty startled to find vampires and werewolves.
So this is a funny story, actually. When I sent Steph an early copy of, or an early draft, actually, of Paranormalcy, there's a section where they get an emergency call from, I said, a suburb of Paris. And she's like, oh, I was really concerned about Anna and ATN.
That's so cute.
Yeah, no, I would really caution Evie not to bring her taser out around Calla, because have
danger.
Absolutely no faith in Evie's ability to take Calla down.
Calla appreciates that. I mean, we've talked about it before. Yes. We think that once Evie and Calla worked out what the boundaries were, they would be good friends.
Yeah.
That initial meeting would be probably very tense.
Just a little.
Yeah.
That's too
funny. I love it.
It's
very nice.
Well, without getting into spoilers, for each of you, what was your favorite scene in your books to write?
I mean, it's always the kissing scenes for me.
Yeah, me too. I'm always. I'm all about the kissing scenes. I love the kissing scenes.
Always.
And then the battle scenes. I like both of those.
Some really great action.
I need them both.
I love writing flirting dialogue. I also really like... I have a scene in Supernaturally with a unicorn. It's probably my favorite scene I've ever written.
Oh my gosh, I love that scene.
I'm actually really into it. But yeah, that was a fun one.
We'll look forward to that. So we have some more listener questions from our listener Jennifer Alex, for all of you. Have there been any characters that started out going in one direction but somehow ended up completely different by the end? Kirsten laughs.
I love these little smirks out here.
Almost all my characters have ended up taking completely different directions than I expected them to. Because I think you have an idea about who they are, and then as you write and put them in circumstances, you learn what they're really afraid of, what they really want, and what their flaws are. And that always surprises and changes things. So I would say that they all do that one way or another.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I agree. Probably for me, the most... was Vivian. I ended up feeling a lot more compassion for her than I expected to, that I was not initially planning on having that compassion for her as a character. But that was very important to me, and I'm glad that it showed up, and I use it in later books, too. So
yeah, it's cool that it's not totally black and white, good versus evil.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. For me, it's really the characters in the second book, Lola, because I worked on them for a decade, and it was really hard to pin down who they were, and they went through a lot of transformations, and in particular, the boy in that book, his name is Cricket, and whereas Etienne came out very naturally and organically, and I hardly had to do anything to him, he was just walking and talking on his own. Cricket, I really wrestled with for years, and in his very first incarnation, he was... they were all adults, and he was a botanist, and there's absolutely zero of that. And there are no plants involved in the story anymore, so...
No hot botanist?
No. He's an engineer, which doesn't sound hot, but I make it hot.
No.
Steph could make a botanist hot. She's the only person in the world I have absolute faith could make a hotnist.
I think
hot.
It is. I definitely
make a botanist hot. Botanists are hot.
I definitely still want to write one someday.
Was it orcas?
Botanist.
Right?
Hot botanist.
I just wanted to say that. I like this.
Botanist, yeah, that was better.
Another listener question is there anything specific, like a quiet room, a certain kind of music, atmosphere, that you guys like to have for your writing moments and to keep the momentum going?
I've had to give all mine up. I got so that I had to have this checklist, this check, 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 until I could write. Mm. And then And then it just got too hard, and if the situation wasn't ideal, whatever. And so with one of the most recent books I wrote, I actually threw it all out the window. I didn't sit down in my office with my headphones and the Pandora station. I actually took a notebook and sat outside and wrote by hand. And switching it up for me really unlocked all of these creative barriers that I had actually set up for myself. Although I do always like to have music, and I like to have a specific, not necessarily a playlist, but a Pandora station on the internet that has like a specific tone. For me, it's not so much about individual songs, it is about tone, but
cool. Yeah. For me, I can write anywhere as long as I have coffee and my iPod. So I could pretty much have an IV drip of coffee glass. Nice. And I do create playlists, but that's very important to me.
Yeah, cool. I create playlists for tone as well, but the bulk of my writing is usually done to fairly obnoxious dance music, because I write really late at night and I use it kind of at, like, I'm drinking coffee too, but that's like the extra shot. And so I listened to, while writing Lola last year, I listened to a lot of Girl Talk and Lady Gaga. And those are so far from the playlist, but like I would pull out the playlist when I was really working on one scene, detailed and trying to work on the mood. But for the most part, it was just like boom, 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 boom.
How fun. Can't wait to read it. Okay, thank you, ladies, so much. It's almost time for your event to start, so we better wrap this up. But again, just thank you so much, and our listeners are going to love it.
Thank you so much for having us. It was fun.
Thanks again to the Barnes & Noble in Oceanside and these lovely, talented authors for sitting down and chatting with us. After the interview, we got a chance to go out into the crowd and meet some of their fans, and here's a few clips of what they had to say. Remember, this is recorded on an iPhone out in the crowd, so excuse a little bit of the sound quality, okay?
Hi, I'm Lauren. I blog at 365 Days of Reading.
I follow you on Twitter.
And I guess out of all of the authors' books, my favorite would have to be Paranormal Scene, because I just love Evie. She just totally kicks butt, and she's sassy and smart, and
so sassy.
So sassy. Definitely. And yes, I'm Kim K as well.
Okay, you're cool.
My name's Sharon, and I'm a parent. Actually, Kirsten is a friend of my daughter's teacher.
Oh.
And my daughter's teacher, Beth, wasn't able to be here today, so she asked me to come in for her seat. And we always get art, or actually Beth gets the art, and I get to read them before the students get to read them.
Nice.
So that's what I'm doing here, and I came to get this book signed, because forgot the art.
Oh,
yeah.
On vacation. Moms are the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm Michelle. I'm at The Media Bunny on Twitter, and I'm just excited to be here. I'm here for all three authors. I love all their books. Don't ask me to choose one of their favorite characters. I cannot. I will say that I probably reread Anna and the French. It's a ridiculous amount of times that I won't admit. I have to admit it here, but I won't admit it. But I'm excited to see all three.
Hi, I'm Cher.
And I'm Sarah. And it was so freaking awesome to be here. And we can't wait to read more of Kristen White's next book, Supernatural.
And they were all super nice, so wish you would have come.
Thank you to everyone who gave us your comments. It was so much fun having you on the podcast. So that pretty much wraps it up for our special edition episode. But before we go, Michelle has some killer music for you today.
Okay, so today's special edition song is from the artist Andrew Plan at andrewplan.com. And Andrew Plan is doing a year of song. So he keeps posting up songs on his blog that he's sharing with everybody. This song is called Say Yes or No. And while I feel that it's just an amazing love song in general, it really called to me for Nightshade and Wolfsbane. It just so Shay, Ren, and Kella. So here you go.
Until next time.
Oh, lover. So much withered here since you fell apart. Don't pretend. Can't you see? It's finally time to face your world without lies. But you just crack a smile when I waste on you my best. Oh, say yes or say no. Hold on. Tell me what I've done. Oh, someone else is in your eyes. Don't pretend. You should know what it meant to say, oh man, take your bow. But you just crack a smile, no more reasons left to chase. Oh, say yes or say no. Nothing ever starts, nothing ever ends while I drown for your love. Can't you see what I am? And I pray you'll make it real, 'cause there's nothing I can feel until you say yes or say no. Say yes or say no. Say yes or say no. Say